Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, an old good buddy of mine, John Robert Wilson. Yay!
Episode
261 of Highway Diary. What a pleasure to talk to my good buddy. Now, how did we meet, John Robert?
We took a political improv class together, if I remember correctly, that was taught by Doug Moe.
Yes.
At the now defunct Upright Citizens Brigade Training Center, New York City.
Now, I wanted to ask you about that. Is all of UCB shut down? Like, it's over?
All right, before we get into the weeds, dude, it's great to hear from you.
I
want your listeners to know that I'm extremely excited to talk to you, because we haven't talked in a long time.
I know, we were always good buddies. I mean, you were such a good friend of mine. When I was in undergrad at the New School, I was putting on... I was the coach of my college's improv class, basically, or what? How do you call it? The extracurricular activity? There was a club.
Yeah, you were like the chaperone.
Chaperone of my improv club, and I brought you in to host some segments and do some stand-up, so I always really appreciated that.
So, yeah, some of your students actually took classes at UCB, and they actually kind of got on teams and stuff, and I saw them perform. It was really good to see.
That's fucking great, you know? And, like, I think improv as a base is just, like, helped me in so many ways in my life. Like, just talking, interviewing. If the interviewer says, do you want to do it, you know, do you want this job like this? You say, yes, and I want this and this benefit package as well, you know?
Like,
as a negotiator. How has improv helped your life?
Me personally, aside from just like the obvious being able to perform on stage, it's just like what you said, like even in a lot of social situations you can deconstruct them really quickly, because that's what improv is. It's about deconstructing things really quickly and making assumptions based off that deconstruction, and usually you're right, because if your assumptions are based off of reality and evidence that you've observed, then, you know, you usually can steer conversation a certain way, or if someone's stymied, you can kind of keep things going.
Mm-hmm.
Improv is also an exercise of bullshit. Like, how long can you just keep talking bullshit without any silence? You know, that's challenging for some people, very easy for others.
And if some people are narcissists, if you just agree with them all the time, they're like, wow, this guy's great. You know what I mean?
Anyway, it's great to talk to you. So I actually listened to the latest episode, and I remember you talking about how while you're in LA right now still, right?
No, I'm in New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay, but you were talking about how you were in LA and you got robbed at gunpoint?
Oh, I was in New Orleans.
Oh, okay, now that makes much more sense. Okay, because I heard L.A. Okay, that makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
You're robbed at gunpoint in New Orleans. Yeah. Okay.
So, I went to grad school at the University of New Orleans. So, real quick.
Right.
After we, our show in 2008 called The Spin disbanded, although you picked it up again in 2009 when I moved to LA, right?
We tried another spank, but it didn't get picked up again.
Okay, so there was one more show, and I was like, so they replaced me in the cast.
There's just one more show.
And I was like, who's this guy? But anyway... So I moved to L.A. after our run at the UCB New York ended. I started taking classes at the UCB L.A., but I basically worked on reality shows for 5 years, and then I started doing stand-up. And then I moved to New Orleans to get my master in screenwriting from the University of New Orleans. When I started my second year, I started Uber driving to make money on the side. I drove some guy from... his house in Mid-City, New Orleans, to basically an adult video store off Chef Monsieur in Upper East New Orleans, which is very dangerous. He calls the phone, so he left his phone in the car, but I'm like an hour away when he calls his phone, and I pick up the phone in the car and I say hello. He's like, hey man, my name's Eugene, you know, blah blah blah. I left my phone in your car. Come and bring it back to me. I'll give you $20. So I drove an hour to go give him his phone back. When I walked out of the car, I handed him his phone. I go, where's that $20? He goes, get the fuck out of here. And he pulls a gun on me. So that's what happened.
Oh, that sucks, dude.
Yeah, but it, you know. And then I told
no good deed goes unpunished.
I told the cops in New Orleans, and they're like, "Did he rob you?" I'm like, "No, he didn't rob me." They're like, "Did he hold
the gun at me?"
The gun, but he's like, "Did they hold the gun to your head?" And I'm like, "No, he just kind of kept it by his waist." And then they're like, "There's nothing we could do. People in New Orleans are allowed to have guns. Goodbye." And I was like,
"Oh my god,
you're not gonna beat the shit out of this fucking guy? I know where he works. No. I know where he lives." They're like, "Not really. That sounds difficult and dangerous." I'm like, "All right, cool."
Oh, I'm sorry that that happened to you.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right.
So, we were in that political show, The Spin, at UCB. But, the now defunct UCB New York, the training center is closed and the theater is closed.
Both of them? Because there was the 26th and 8th, and then there was one in the East Village. Are they both down?
Chelsea, so there was a big hubbub when they moved from Chelsea to Hell's Kitchen, because they more or less abandoned their lease in Chelsea, and another improv theater immediately took it over.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it now, but, excuse me, but they moved to Hell's Kitchen, and there was a bit of a hullabaloo about the location, because it wasn't as good of a location as Chelsea, and it wasn't intimate, it was too big. And it was really expensive, and it was just, and you had to walk through Times Square to get to it. And
so they were trying to go like, "Hey, we're just a Broadway theater type of thing."
Yeah, I think that's what they were aiming for. And I think they were expecting volume to keep increasing exponentially, because if you remember the Del Close Marathon they had every year, it just kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more like of an institution.
Yeah.
And I think they just they never expected that to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, they had like a whole festival where it was like, you know, they're like, "Well, it's turning into Woodstock." But the thing about the Del Close Marathon is when they were in the theater in Chelsea, what was it? You know, 200 seats, is that it, right? Less than that?
Something like that. It wasn't a whole lot. I mean, it would fill up really fast, especially after DCM 8 and 9.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, well, if we can always do 200 seats, then we can always do 500 seats. And we could always do 1,000 seats. And then a little bit of greed turns in. I remember when they opened up their Sunset locations. So they came to L.A. in a little place in Franklin and, like, Los Feliz in Los Angeles. And then, first of all, I got a little, I don't want to kick a dead dog here, but, you know, when I went over there, I started noticing that the people that were getting booked on shows weren't necessarily the best students coming from the training center. They were getting a lot of people that were, like, on a show on Nickelodeon, or, like, on this crappy MTV show, or this one, or... So they were only getting people that had, like, active credits, like they're actively on a TV show, and they were, like, terrible. And I think Yeah, so then they expanded to the Sunset location in, and it was just a bigger venue, exactly like the Broadway one. And just because you can fill up 200 seats every night in an intimate venue doesn't mean you can fill up 1,000 seats every night in a bigger one. Because part of the appeal of the UCB was that it was subversive and independent.
Right, it was the underground kind of.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, but, well, I mean, you can say the same thing about Saturday Night Live. When it came out in the late 70s, it was you know, the underground, but now it is, without question, the institution. But yeah, it did kind of feel like that. I mean, all the theaters kind of felt like that. Like, UCB especially, but the Magnet felt like that. The Pit felt like that.
Yeah.
Improv is kind of like, by its nature, an underground art form, and is best consumed in that sort of intimate setting. I mean, even if you have amazing improv sets recorded on camera, like Middleditch and Schwartz on Netflix right now, which is hilarious, it's still not going to be as magical and amazing as it would be in person.
And I feel like when 200 people are crammed into a small theater, there's a way different energy than 75 people in a 500 penny theater.
Yeah, they spread them across a bunch of different seats.
Yeah,
yeah, and it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't an intimate space, and I don't know, it wasn't a good location. I mean, I kind of stopped going to UCB after Hell's Kitchen closed down. I don't think I ever went to the, or I'm sorry, after Chelsea closed down, because I never went to. So all I saw was like videos and pictures of the place, and it just talk about it, and hardly anyone talked about it positively. When they weren't on the record.
Yeah, that's tough. Cause it's
but it was really hard because it's closed down now. They were in like a financial kind of weird place and a sort of a weird place with trust before the pandemic, and this just kind of accelerated things.
They accused one of their students, right, of sexual misconduct, and then he sued them back and won. And so didn't they have to give him like a $250,000, like, as they're trying to expand?
You can say what his name rhymes with. You don't want to say the name exactly.
I would have to look it up in a news article, but that's what I heard. You know what I'm talking about, though?
I know that, I got to be really careful. I know that someone did sue them for labor discrimination or something like that. Only because...
Okay.
Gone to the management... and said that he had sexually assaulted 9 different women. And, without going into too much detail, one of the women, or I think the woman that accused him of that, is a girl that I dated for a long time while I lived in New York City.
Oh, wow.
I gotta be really careful. But
that's why I called you, for the inside information, you know?
Yeah, well, I don't want to get involved in someone else's legal crap, but anyway. But what I can say is that I think there's a legal brief that you can Google. It's so-and-so versus Upright Citizen Brigade, but I think they just kind of out-lawyered them, because they had some massively expensive Hollywood lawyers on retainer. And I think they just kind of wore him out of money. I'm not sure he got any money, but I do know that the lawyers got money, so...
Oh. So you're talking about Schmarin Massler?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's...
Yes.
Yeah, so I just heard that he sued back in, like, won cash, because they didn't have, like, his common test tube, you know what I mean? So they couldn't prove it. Is that true?
It might be sealed or something like that. I'm not sure. I just heard that he gave up. But I've also heard that they just gave him money to make him go away too.
Yeah, but right. While they're expanding, yeah. It's like, man, can you imagine? Right, like, if I was this guy, I would make it like, you Google his name right now, and it's just the only thing that comes up.
Brutal. Yeah, his life as a comedian as an actor, entertainer, is pretty much shot for at least the next decade.
No, it's over. It's over. It's over. Come on. That's the only thing it Googles? Yeah. Oh, so he's a sexual predator at this improv place.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
He's got to, like, fry fish in the back of a fucking OK Corral now. That's it.
I think he works at the Apple Store.
All right. That's
it. I heard that he tried to get transferred to another Apple Store, but then the manager, like, Googled him, and, of course, that other stuff came up, and they're like, nope! And he's like, can't even fucking transfer Apple Stores.
Unbelievable. It's sad to see it go, because all the good memories we had there.
Yeah.
But also all the training, all the experience, it's, like, completely invaluable,
Yeah, and you're not going to find a training center like that for a long time. I heard the one Improv Olympics shut down too, so it's like all the really good training centers.
The Improv Olympic LA went down when I was there around 2017, mm-hmm. something like that. The LA one died, and it's sad because it's like you know, that place gave me skills for my whole life. I'll never forget it. And do you remember also, like, I don't know what your experience was. I was in undergrad. And when I took level two as a sophomore in undergrad with Chris Gethard, I remember going home and fucking bawling, crying. Like, I suck. I'm never going to be good at this. Those classes were fucking hard, man.
Well, I mean, improv is, like, the hardest thing you will probably ever do, or one of the hardest things you'll ever do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It will be, period. I mean, I did, you know, three different calculuses to get my degree, and they kicked my ass. But they didn't kick my ass as hard as improv training did.
Do you remember any bad days going home and, like, being real upset with your performance in class?
Oh, yeah. I remember being really... but that was when that at that level, that's when you're learning to relax on stage, because the reason I was making bad choices because I wasn't calming down and thinking, or not overthinking, or I wasn't listening hard enough because I was too focused on what I was going to say, because I was at that level, I still was at that short form brain where you have to be funny within 15 seconds or else the scene's going to be swept.
Yeah, right.
But I do remember several times just riding the subway back and being like, God, that sucked, or I shouldn't have said that, or I needed to relax, or I don't need to be such a stickler for form. You know, forms are made to be bent and broken once you've mastered them. And trying to remember a specific time. I don't know. I do remember as time went on that became less and less of a thing, like feeling bad after a show. Because even if you start getting a bunch of iterations under your belt, you know, even if you have a bad show, you won't care anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember, so let me just put it like this. I went through the UCB. They beat you down and beat you down and say, you could do it better. You could do it better. But they're like almost training you like an Olympian. Like, you know, those Olympic diving coaches are like, they don't go, oh, good job. They're like, get your fucking chunky ass up that fucking high dive and do the fucking backflip.
Do better.
You piece
do
of
better.
Shit.
You're better than that, yeah.
And that's kind of how the UCB trained us. And so I went to Los Angeles, and I joined this group called Monkey Butler for a while. It was an improv group.
Remember that. I remember seeing that on social media.
Yeah, so I was joining. I was coaching this group, and they gave me 16 people. And by the show, there was 8 left.
Oh.
And I was just like, this, I'm just doing standard issue UCB training, you know? And they were like, yeah, you're way too hard on people. And I was like, this is how I learned, you know what I mean? And 8 people were like, fuck you. You're a pompous dick. You think you know everything. I'm like, nah.
Yikes.
No, that's yikes. Just, this is like East this Coast mentality. But anyway, I just think that there's big cultural differences between L.A. and New York and New Jersey. Like, people are, like, way honest with each other in New York and New Jersey, and in L.A., everyone's like, you know, well, I'll be, like, 15% friends with you so that you, because you know this guy, and then I'll be 12% friends with them because they know that person, and everything is, like, social math instead of, like, having an opinion. But,
everything's, like, social math over just having genuine friends.
Right, yeah. It's everyone is like a fake person who's not trying to be too mean or confrontational because,
yeah,
you know? And I think Jersey is all about confrontation, but in a productive way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I remember even before I started doing, or while I was training, I was telling my dad who lives in Texas, I was like, you know, you're going to get in disagreements with people. Up in the Northeast, you're less likely to get into a shoving match if you disagree with someone.
Right.
You know, you're more, if you, or even if someone bumps you in the street, you can say, you know, hey, fuck you, buddy. And they'll be like, meh. You know, in the South, you bump into someone and you say, fuck you, buddy. They might be armed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be careful.
And I think it's because of emotional intelligence, maybe. It's like,
maybe.
A debate is more productive than a fisticuff.
Yeah. But you know what's really sad? Still talking about improv. Did you ever get a chance to perform at Caveat NYC down in the Lower East Side?
No.
It was this amazing theater on Clinton Street. It's still there, but it's closed, obviously, because you know that New York is still, we're still under quarantine. And you can't pack people in the theaters yet. But it was billed as, quote, intelligent nightlife, unquote. And this guy that ran, his name is Dr. Ben Lilly, and Thank You Robot has had which is my improv group, which is still, which would still be going if it wasn't the quarantine, had a regular show there that we kind of moved from under St. Mark's, which was a little indie theater down in the in St. Mark's Place, kind of near the East Village. We moved that to Caveat, and but that's closed down now too. So it's just like I don't, no one's been able to pay their rent. So even when things kind of get back to normal, these places are closed down and owe so much money in rent that it's not feasible for them to stay open. So I don't know what comedy, New York comedy, is going to do after this.
Yeah, and that was my whole plan, was to, you know, put out this special. I'm putting out a special soon, going to Journal Square, you know, and being a New York City stand-up comic. But in my lease in New Jersey is up November 1st. I was going to go to Journal Square, take the PAT train, do stand-up in New York November 2020, but it looks like it's going to be more like March 2021, if it ever opens up. And by then, I might have to get, you know, I don't know, some kind of passport that says I don't have the COVID cooties or something.
Or that you got a vaccine or something.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
I don't know.
I hate to change the subject, but we lost a year.
Yeah.
We're going to lose a year because of our reaction to this virus. It's so just frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like we fought a war.
But speaking of my UCB train, I want to say something else. Not only did I have a problem at Monkey Butler, where half my class left, but then I go to grad school, and like some of my classes, like when I went to Screenwriting 101, I would be like, give hard notes on other people's screenplays, and they would fucking pop like popcorn and start screaming at
me.
And I was like, what? And I would never attack one of my other classmates. Like, personally, I wouldn't do, like, oh, you're lazy. But I would say, like, this character loses his accent here. He's a Jamaican character, and now he's not speaking Jamaican. Like, you know? And, like, the plot point doesn't make sense here because this didn't happen. And this character said this was going to happen, and then it didn't. And they'd be like, you know what? Fuck you! And, like, start screaming.
Whoa!
Like, oh, my God! You know?
Notes. Calm down,
in the bro. In the South, it's fighting words, you know? It's,
yeah.
I'm just like, this is how I was trained. Then I went back to L.A. And maybe the point of the story is I'm a complete asshole. But then I went back to L.A. and I went to this group. There's a group called Deadline Junkies, and we would write screenplays, and there was, like, a cast of actors to read our screenplay, so I would, like, you know, cast the actors in this group to, like, read, and I would highlight scripts and give it to them, and then all the writers would be sitting in the booths, and they would give notes, and, like, when I would give notes, for the first, like, 3 months, people were, like, would accept my notes, but as it went on, people got more and more mad. You know, there was, this one lady freaked out on me, and I'm like, okay, we read 30 pages of your script out of 90. So far, 4 unicorns have opened presents with their nose, and I don't know where they're going. I don't know what the goal is. I don't know one of their names. One unicorn, when they were opening presents, said to another unicorn, you don't know who I am, but I'll tell you where I'm from. And I wrote that quote down. It was like the most ridiculous. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you why you're here and what's really going on here. Never was that answered. So I gave this speech about how much this fucking script sucked balls. And, like, I don't even know how to even start to explain to you that this is so fucking garbage. And, but I was like, none of the other writers in the group would, like, co-sign my notes, which were blatantly obvious. And it's just like, and they would freak out when I would be, they're like, oh, you're so mean. Oh, you're this, you're that. And then I would, like, smoke pot in between. You know, I'd go in the parking garage and smoke pot, come back up, you know, for the, in the intermission. And then, and then they started going, oh, he smells like pot. He's just crazy out of his mind. And I'm like, no, I smoke a little pot to calm my nerves down because I feel like I'm the only one sane in this fucking... this is not a, like, a screenwriting group should not be a support group for hacks, okay? A screenwriting group should be, let's get better at screenwriting. And if somebody is basically writes something that's retarded and makes no fucking sense from pillar to post, I should make that a bad experience for them. You know why? Because when I was in UCB class, dude, I would go home crying, you know? Because Chris Gethard is the funniest improviser ever. And he was like my level 3 teacher, you know?
Right. Me too.
And he cared about it. Were we in that group together? Maybe. Maybe we were, right?
I can't remember if we were in the same class or not. I know Matt Little and Chris Scott were definitely in that class. I'm trying to think who else was. Abra Tabak was. But she's not in Thank You Robot anymore. And
I don't remember. Maybe not. Maybe I met you at Doug Moe's class. But anyway, but dude, I remember like going home crying, like I suck. This guy's so much fucking better than me. And other people, they get those hard notes and they go, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think the benefit we had with our teachers is that we could go to the theater and watch them perform.
Yes.
And they didn't suck. They were amazing. And you'd be like, if you never saw them perform before, and then you went to their class, and you'd be like, who is this cocky asshole? And then you saw them perform, and you're like, holy shit, this guy's a genius. He made this decision with this context, and he linked it all together, and he seemed like he did a magic trick. And then you go back to class, you know, the next week, you're like, holy shit, please, can you teach me how to do that magic trick that you did on stage?
Yeah.
And they don't seem so cocky after that. And it kind of was a fine line because, you know, when you get into it, there were some cocky teachers that now have had the chips taken off their shoulders, so to say. But for the most part, I think cockiness could have been it might have been misconstrued more like confidence in the theory of the improvs. Because, you know, they really hammered in the theory of acceptance and game theory.
Yeah.
And as long as you could train your brain to do game theory and all the different little things that make improv, like character stuff and communication and you know, teamwork and hard listening and yes anding and all that other stuff. So when you can make all of that muscle memory, then that's when it becomes really, really, really... It takes a long time to get to that muscle memory stage, and that's why the classes, especially the early ones on, are really, really painful. And that's why it's always really hard to get off the ground with your improv troupe, too, because the first 20, 30 shows that you're going to do are going to suck, and it's going to suck to walk away from it. But eventually, you'll keep at it. You'll learn each other's moves and stuff, and you'll start making people laugh, hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. That's really making me... Like, you know,
that's how it worked for me, at least.
Jackie Clark was my level 101 teacher, and I just remember like going like, oh my god, like, this girl, like, I was, like, shocked, like, in level one, because I was like, oh, I'm the funny kid in my high school, you know? You know, I was in, like, sketch group, and, like, I formed my sketch group in my high school, and blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I'm the funny guy. Dude, I go into level 101, and as she's, like, I try to make this move, I try to start this scene with my scene partner, and then she goes, stop, okay, you made this and this and this mistake. And everything she said was 100% right. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? How did she know all my mistakes and, like, cut me down, like, so easily?
Yeah. it's those moments when you learn that there's a massive difference between being funny with your friends when you're not on stage and being funny on purpose, on time, when you're on stage in front of a group of people that you've never met.
Yeah. But you, so you're like a computer scientist, right?
Yeah, I'm still a software developer during the day for a college out in Boston.
So you kind of almost see it like a science. Like you said the word game theory to comedy. I think that would be really interesting if you would expand on what you mean by that.
So, unfortunately, it doesn't relate to the economics theory or the physics theory of game theory, but... I do. For me personally, I use the same muscle to program computers to do improv. It's sort of the same similar muscle in your brain. And when I say game theory, I'm talking about the object of doing an improv scene or an improv set is to be funny. And it's one thing to be funny in individual scenes, but it's another thing to be funny in individual scenes and have an overarching theme to your set. That's sort of what the magic trick is. And game theory comes into play at the start of every scene in that you're always looking for what's funny about the scene. And the game of the scene is what's funny that other players can play from different points of view. Mm-hmm. And there's different types of games. You know, there's character games and physical games. So, for example, in games, usually you can describe them in three to five words, maybe. Like, I remember Adam Pally was doing an improv scene with Marcy Giroux, and they were in a cubicle office, you know, and he kind of, you know, climbs up the wall of the cubicle and leans over, and he's like, Marcy's typing on her improv computer, and Adam Pally says, hey, Karen, you know, I was wondering if you wanted to kind of get dinner with me tonight. And then Marcy looks at him and she goes, and that gets a big laugh, and then Adam Pally smiles and nods. And he goes, all right, I'll see you tonight. So why was that funny, right? It's because something weird happened, and he responded to it like it was normal. And so the game of the scene is women demons are normal in this.
And all men can understand them. Like when Chewbacca's like, ah, and then Han Solo's right. Like, look, we'll get the radiator, you know? And,
right. And so they did several beats of that scene. So what are other ways you can see that game? Maybe this is not the best example. This is more closer to what a character game is. But so let's say you saw that scene, the cubicle scene. Wouldn't it be funny to see that character propose creatively to her, and wouldn't it be funny to see like them on their deathbed and what that interaction was like? So a game is something that can be played from different points of view in different times or in different places, and like, the same premise will still be funny but yet heightened as you move forward in time.
Like the first unusual thing, and then it's like, oh, that's the unusual thing, so let's follow, like, if that's true, then what? If that's true, then what?
Right.
And then this is an analogy just for, like, and then you have, like, the world leaders deciding on world peace, and then that same crazy thing happens, you know? So it's like,
right.
I love improv just because, like, you can explain, like, really complicated philosophical things, you know, like, in the stupidest scenes. Like, you know, you could be a dog from space, like, finding a new chemical, or you could be whatever. It's like, as long as you play the shit out of that thing.
And then you have to have, like, the doggy scientists having the ethical doggy conversation of whether they should use this new chemical for good or doggy bad, and what all those different specifics look like.
And one dog is, like, the craziest scientist, but he really just has rabies, you know what I mean? And they're like, he's off the rock.
Regarding game theory, that was really specific to UCB. I can remember going to the Magnet into the Pit, and their performers were more focused on the relationship between characters, which is still incredibly, incredibly important. I mean, one of the first things they teach you in improv is you need to establish the who, what, where, when, and why, or even just three of those, the who, what, where, as quick as you can.
Yeah. So, like, you know, mom, still, like you know, mom, it's my birthday tomorrow, and I was wondering if, you know, this and that, we could decorate the garage. So now we have a, we're at home, you know, the relationship between the
characters. We know our relationship, we know what's happening.
And now we have an activity to do with something we're going to see later.
Right. And then, you know, I could be like, Brad, is... is this about you having no friends again? You know.
But mom, if we decorate the house, we can make it like already a party. So even if it's just me and you, it's like we're already here. And then maybe someone will come by.
My sweet boy, my sweet friendless, friendless, unlikable boy.
We can invite like the Tones or the Rabbits to his trip. Wait, I texted my friend George, and I think he's gonna come. He said he made several other engagements are going on at the time. But yeah, so game theory, and then like
I am so rusty.
Yeah, me too. I have been doing some stand up in outdoor venues during the quarantine, but yeah, I'm like rusty.
Yeah,
as hell.
That's going good.
Yeah, in New Jersey, there's, you know, You just got to abide by what the CDC does, but some, you know, restaurants or whatever have, like, kind of a beer garden or, like, an outdoor area, and they just kind of set up a stage there. I did stand-up last night at my friend's pool party. He just kind of set up a backyard stage. Dude, I'm, like, I'm trying to practice my jokes, so I'll go wherever I need to go, you know?
That's called dedication right there. That's called powering through the epidemic.
Yeah, man. I just don't want to lose it. Can I tell you about some personal things? And I'm like still like trying to figure out what to do. Not so personal, but
sure.
So I finished my special. I made, you know, I drove from LA to New Orleans to New York City, and I shot 50 shows on the road. It took like a year and a half to edit, but it edited, and then I put it in 4 festivals. It got rejected from every festival, and then 3 of them out of the 4 aren't even happening. Then I go, okay, how can I distribute this? So I put it on Amazon Prime, and Amazon Prime took like a week of like delivery. You got to deliver closed captioning files,
right?
Your artwork. You have to have a trailer, a poster, and the poster has to be a certain aspect ratio, and the, you know, a certain number of pixels, you know, a
certain resolution.
Correct. Right. So I jumped through all these hoops. It takes about a week. I click submit. It was like, you know, we're under the review process. Now, I tell some very dirty, some saucy jokes in this. I'm not going to lie. Some saucy.
Like a good saucy joke every now and then.
Some saucy jokes. Well, they all get rejected from Amazon Prime due to content. They said no to all of them, and I found out 2 days ago. And this was my whole plan, to put it out like that. So now I'm like, what the fuck do I do? Do I go... So then I put the audio on something called CD Baby that aggregates out to...
CD Baby's been around for a while.
So I did...
But no one has CDs anymore, though, do they?
Yeah, but it's more like iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, you know, Pandora.
Uh-huh.
It's more like to that, right? So I put it on that for the audio, but I'm like, maybe I should just do the video for YouTube now, you know? What do you think?
That's tough, man.
It also costs, like, all my money, like, beyond all my money.
I was going to say, like, you probably want to make some money off of this.
And, so yeah, it costs...
You probably just don't want to upload it to YouTube. Like, hey, I hope it gets me more fame.
Or it gets me more shows. Oh, wait, they're all closed right now.
Right.
So I'm like, what the fuck did I just do with my
life? Dude, maybe you should just hold on to it. Like, sit on it until the epidemic is over.
Yeah, and then go YouTube to shows, like, when that's ready? I don't know.
So, you probably have... You have the edited version, right? But you still have a bunch of old footage you didn't use, right?
What do you mean, like, from the 50 shows, what was left on the cutting room floor?
Yeah, do you still have the raw, unedited originals, or no?
Yeah.
So there's probably a lot of stuff in there that you didn't use, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could probably leverage that stuff into free YouTube content that you could probably, like, leverage just to, like, get you views and subscribers and stuff, or, like, and also, like, put it up on Twitter and, you know, put it up all over social media. I don't know if you think they're good enough, but then again, you know, maybe cut down your main edited video to just, like, a few of its quickest, best stuff and preview it on social media to say, like, you know, here it is on iTunes for, or here it is on whatever platform you're selling it on for 99 cents, you know, for the whole thing.
What do you think? So I was, like, looking at Louis C.K.
Oh, also, that's a tough one, dude.
When I was in grad school, you know, I studied Louis C.K.'s career. I wrote a paper. So I did a class called, you know, film producing. And I really looked into Louis C.K.'s business model and his philosophy, and I studied the hell out of it. And, you know, he has on his own website, he's even, like, made movies that he's, like, published on his own website for $5. I'm wondering, what if I put the SD version on for YouTube for free, but the HD version for $5 on my website? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. If people can get it, I mean, you gotta realize most people aren't watching it on, you know, HD. Most people are gonna watch it on their phones.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that if you did that, that means that you're kind of relying on a market that's probably pretty niche and you won't get too many bites from.
Because I'm like, there's like two things. There's two things going on. Like it's like fame and talent, right? So you want to, right? They're completely separate entities. Because you know, some people that are famous.
Well, I saw you have a website and stuff, and you have videos and you have featured stuff and everything up there. So I mean,
you know,
yeah, I don't know, dude. Maybe you just gotta like sit on it and just. I know you want to make money off of it right now, but. No one, even if it like got a million views on YouTube, if you put it out for free and it got in front of the right people, everyone's going to just say, "Well, yeah, but we're not booking comedy shows."
Yeah, right.
Right now,
I mean, there's some like outdoor people are doing like drive-in movie theater style, but the fact is, like, if I got booked tomorrow to headline, and I have to do like 45 minutes of stand-up, like I am so out of shape because I haven't done it in. You know, I'm only, like, going to mics where I could do, like, 5 minutes or 6 minutes. Like, to do, like, 45 minutes, like, I don't know. I'm like, it's kind of crazy. There's no opportunity to practice, like, a longer set like that now. So, I don't know. This fucking pandemic sucks so bad.
Have you, I mean, I know, do you do political stuff in your set or no? Is it all different range of stuff?
A little bit. I say, like, one of my jokes is, like, you know, they try to change Budweiser to America beer. I think they should cut the middleman and just call it Drone Murder, you know.
That's really good.
A little political.
a little salty political joke for you there.
A little sauce on that one.
Maybe, what about, did you think about, like, the super hyper quick, instantly consumable social media, like TikToks and the like?
Yeah,
like one joke with Tiki Taki.
Oh, okay. I thought you had to have Down syndrome to be on TikTok. Is that not true?
You do.
I thought it was only for like people like yelling at their neighbors for taking their crack or.
I don't know. I don't have it, so what do I know? I'm just throwing stuff out there, seeing what sticks. But yeah, you're kind of in a hard place, dude, because nothing, even if it did, like I said, even if it did good, nothing really actionable.
Yeah, it's
would
like
come out
it's like
it,
even if it was just,
6 months,
I gave it away for free on YouTube, right? Which I'd be like, Mark Norman did it, Sam Morrell did it. It's like, oh, you know, that makes sense. If I'm just doing what they're doing, then I'm doing what everyone's doing. But then, like, you know, the whole thing with of giving it for free would be to try to get booked for shows and, like, headline, like, you know, the Borgata Casino or whatever the fuck. And, yeah, so I'm just like, man, what the hell is my whole life been? Have I wasted my life with my liberal arts degrees?
Have you tried submitting to any of the late night guys? I know they're looking for, like, remote content.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I was thinking, like, so my whole plan was to blast it out on Amazon, and I got this list of, like, every newspaper and online video, online magazine I could possibly get my hands on their email. And I got an email list of, like, 500, where it even includes, like, New Zealand, Australia, like, every newspaper I could possibly find in the world. And so I got this, I manually made this list, and, you know, off searching different magazines' websites and finding the contact button and then finding the email, finding the editors and the writers. So I've made this list, and I was, you know, I could definitely, like, post it and blast it out with a big press release, but, you know, a world tour would be the goal of this endeavor. So, if, but maybe I could put it out and it could, people would like it for a couple months, and then things open up again, you know? So that's where putting the whole project on the shelf idea is, like, interesting now to me, you know? Because it's like,
yeah,
it's just a calling card for shows, you know?
Exactly. Well, you just want to be strategic when you, if you ever decide to, like, just plop it on the internet, because very rarely, it happens, but very rarely does content get more popular over time. Usually it's as popular as it's ever going to be is when you drop it, and then it slowly kind of just tapers off.
Right. That's interesting. So what, you're in Denver. I was thinking you lived in New York City because I knew you did for a long, long time. What prompted your move to Denver?
So me and my wife had vacationed here a few times, and I'd been coming to Colorado my whole life before I moved to New York. I was in New York for 12 years. I met my wife. We got married. And we started living together, and then about not even a year after getting married, my wife Crystal had an experience on the subway where some crazy woman, like, chased her out of the subway into someone else, one of our neighbor's buildings, where she had to, like, hide with one of our neighbors. It was ridiculous. And we were just about getting ready to record the podcast Unlimited Lives in our apartment, and because we had just lost the studio space in the creek in the cave. And Crystal's, I was like, what's the matter, Crystal? She came back and she was obviously, like, upset. You ever know, you know, you know, when someone has, like, that look on their face, they come bursting in and she's upset. And she's like, fuck this, we're moving to Denver. And I was like, what? You know, it happened just, like, so suddenly. And, you know, We had sort of been talking about moving from New York, but we were thinking, like, you know, the standard thing is to go to L.A. Mm-hmm. I was like, God, I really hate L.A., though. Like, well, we can go to Chicago. I was like, I don't want to go to Chicago. It's like, it's either we're in New York or, you know, maybe Austin or New Orleans, maybe. You're like, I don't know. But then Denver, it does have a comedy scene. You know, I actually haven't checked it out yet. But, you know, Amy Gerlich's moving out here pretty soon. I know her husband lives out here now. He just started his new job out here in Littleton, I think. And so I think now that Amy's out here, that gives me, like, no more excuses to check out improv here in Denver. But what's funny is we saved so much money moving from New York and living in Denver that I was able to afford to fly back and do my shows in New York City every month. So despite me moving to Denver, up until March of this year, I was doing shows regularly in New York City still.
Oh, you were doing so, Robot...
Thank You Robot in New York City every third Saturday of the month at Caveat NYC.
Oh, dope.
And what's crazy is we used our credit card to get flight miles, and I just used the flight miles to buy the cheap flight from DIA to Newark or the like.
Hey, man, yeah.
I would make a quick trip.
Yeah, the system's, you know, giving you free miles. It's like, you know, just if you're already spending, just use those miles. Right. You know, my credit card, I got like almost 33,000 flight miles. And then I was looking to, because I was thinking to myself, if I put out this album, maybe I want to go to Los Angeles and do some strategic podcast to get my to promote my special wherever it lands. But my credit card stopped doing airline miles when COVID started. Because I guess so many flights were getting canceled that, you know, you would use your miles for the flight, and then the flight would get canceled, and now I go back to the customer service of my rewards program, and they got so annoyed at the flights that they canceled that program for now, and now they're like, oh, do you want to use your points on a KitchenAid mixer? I'm like, fuck a fucking KitchenAid mixer, man.
Yeah, I want to fly.
Yeah, and they're like, yeah, we're not doing that right now.
That was the point. I don't want to make cakes. I want to go places.
Bro. You know?
So, even though the KitchenAid mixer is something great to have, right? My wife got one off of Craigslist. They're really fucking expensive.
Yeah, man.
We got a used one, and man, she's made some really, really good cakes and cookies with it. Oh, man. Turning into a real fatty fat out here.
I'm jealous of you. You know, my dream for my life is to be married with a big, beautiful house and have a KitchenAid mixer and a deli slicer. I think if you have a pull-out, now it's like a seamless, in my head, it's a seamless pull-out cupboard. You pull it out, the deli slicer's
there.
It's
like a station.
Yeah. And it like flaps down for like a, you know, like a flap down tray. Yo, you want some fucking sandwiches right now? You know what I mean? Bop, 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 you know? Like, cure your own roast beef, you know? You'd be the king of the world.
A recording of like your bodega guy. He's like, oh, if it's not my main man. What do you want, main man? Want the regular main man? My main man.
Oh, man. I miss doing comedy. There was one, speaking of a deli slicer in the fat guy in the back of the bodega. I remember going to Flappers. I like really started at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank when I was in LA, and I got to
Flappers. I think.
Yeah, so it's a good comedy club. I got to a point where, like, you know, when I would do shows, they would let me sit in the green room and like then give me whatever food I wanted, and I would walk by the fat guy chopping lettuce, and like I would walk by the guy like cooking the salmon, and I would walk by. Like, and I felt like I was in a Goodfellas movie. Like, you got to walk through the kitchen to get to the green room, you know? I just missed that place.
Oh, man. Now I'm hungry.
But, yeah, so, yeah, and you got your own house now in Denver?
Yeah, me and my wife, we have a condo that we were able to buy in this little town, we're kind of in Denver, but we're kind of not in Denver. We're kind of like outside of downtown, but we're not in the suburbs.
Yeah,
kind of a weird middle area.
My sister used to live in a place called Bloom. It was north of Denver.
Bloomfield?
Is it Bloomfield?
Bloomfield?
Yeah, I think maybe. So. North of Denver, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's where she lived.
Nice. Yeah, it's really great out here. I mean, the air is so much more cleaner.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Having the mountain, being able to go to the mountains is really cool. Me and the wife just took me camping about a week ago. It's a really dog friendly state. Like when you cross the state lines, the state government actually issues you a dog when you drive. Not really, but everywhere has got dog stuff, so everyone owns a dog. So we got a dog.
Mm-hmm. I saw some recently on Facebook. I saw some pictures of you really cuddling up with your pup.
Yeah, he's a good boy. He's a good boy. Daddy loves his good boy.
Aw, that's adorable. So, any kids though, or just the dog for now?
No kids, just the dog for now. No plans for the kids. I mean, I just finished making a computer. We're not even. I mean, thinking about kids.
So. Yeah, you're like, I'm a nerd. Like I'm, you know, we're gonna take this one step at a time here.
Yeah, I'm gonna make sure I buy a VR headset before we start investing in any other baby humans.
Aw. Yeah, right? You got your priorities all together, it sounds like.
Right.
Well, we're almost done here. We've talked for an hour. It flew right by. What a pleasure to talk to my old friend.
I know.
Where can we find your stuff?
Oh, my gosh. I got so much stuff. So I'm going to I host a podcast called Keep Calm and Game On. You can catch it on iTunes and Spotify. And we talk about mainly just video games, me and my friend Carlo, a.k.a. Gus_53. And I've been streaming pretty much every day in the evenings, twitch.tv/JohnRobertWilson. Or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JR_PlaysGames. Same thing on Instagram, too. Oh my god, I've been so bored during quarantine, I made social media accounts just for me playing video games. It's nuts.
Great, and you can find everything to do with me at erichollerbach.com, and pretty soon I'll have some information about my specials. I was hoping for July 15 on Amazon, I was hoping for August 1st on Amazon. Didn't happen, so I gotta regroup and figure out what the hell I'm doing with my life.
You know what, I just thought you could release it on Pornhub. They don't care about the content.
Oh, yeah, so you can find me on Chatterbait, on Chat Roulette, and cumwhores.com. you know, I can't even tell you, you know, we haven't even gotten into this, but after I spent $15,000 on my stand-up special, I, like, moved into my dad's house for 10 months. I mean, that is how much I suffered, cool. Right? Then I went to, I got my place in Montclair. I moved to Montclair, New Jersey. I got kicked out in 3 months because my landlord was another alcoholic, okay? Then I moved to, now I'm in this place in Edison, and it's a little bit calmer. But I'm trying to, you know, I don't know. I basically don't, I'm telling you, I don't know what I'm doing with my life right now, and I don't got a puppy dog. And I got mad jelly.
You gotta hustle. You're hustling, you're doing it, man. Don't feel bad. You're hustling, you're doing it, you're making content.
Man, I just want to. I want a dog and a deli slicer. I start daydreaming at night.
Yeah, those are very attainable goals. I like those.
Can I ask you a serious question though? Do you have what kind of attachments you got to your KitchenAid?
We've got just the regular attachments. We've got the mixer and the folder and like the whisker, but we do not have the meat grinder, which is
that's what I was going to ask you. Do you know about the meat grinder attachment?
Yes, we know about the meat grinder attachment, and I want to get it soon.
Dude, I went down a YouTube hole where this guy was, like, duck hunting. Like I want to be a man's man, you know? I have a couple chest hairs. I want to be a real man's man. This one guy duck hunted. He ground the meat with his KitchenAid mixer. Then he had another thing where he would pump the ground meat through casings and made his own duck sausage. And I'm
that
like,
great.
What the fuck am I doing with my life? You know what I mean?
Well, time to get the meat grinder and things will change. Things will look on up once you get that grinder.
Right? Anyway, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Go find John and Robert Wilson on all of his platforms.
One more time. Thanks for inviting me. It's been a really great talking to you. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Hey, anytime. We should do this again. But I had Chris Gethard, not Chris Gethard, Griswold on my podcast recently. Does that name sound familiar?
Oh, cool. Yeah, I know him.
He's a good friend of mine, too. He's in San Francisco, and he's gender fluid these days.
Nice. Good for him, or her. Whichever he prefers.
I know, it was a little confusing, but what a sweet boy. Okay, anyway, John Robert Wilson, great to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.